Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast, where we help you make disciples in our increasingly post-Christian world. My name is Eric Bryant. I'm one of the executive pastors at Gateway Church in Austin, Texas, along with the founder of Catalyzing Community. You can go to ericbryant.org to sign up for my email newsletter to receive free resources. Well, I'm excited to have with me Mark Sayers. How are you doing, Mark?
Yeah, really well, thanks.
You are in the future, a day ahead of us there in Australia, in Melbourne. It's summer there. You're saying it's hot there. Thanks for joining us. We're so excited to have you. Mark, I've followed you and your writings for years, your podcast. In fact, Rebuilders is still one of my favorites. It's on the queue. I'm a few weeks behind, but tell us a little bit about your ministry there at RED in Melbourne. Mm. For those who aren't aware of RED or your works, just talk a little bit about how you've been doing ministry there in Australia.
Yeah, so I've been here at this church for a number of years, and I took over as senior lead or senior pastor in 2008. And the church has been through a lot of changes, and so I do that, but then also have, I guess, a ministry of writing and speaking about ideas and the future and what's happening in the world and culture, but also with a real bent for a heart for renewal and for God's church to flourish in this time. So I combine two things. It's being a local pastor, but then also having a real heart for the big things happening in the world.
Well, and one of my favorite things is listening to Rebuilders. You really do a great job of looking at current events, but in light of the kingdom of God. What kind of motivated you to delve into so much of the social, geopolitical, anthropological things happening as a pastor?
So I originally went to study advertising at university, and I was equally fascinated and repelled. So I think I there got a real interest in what was the big things happening in the world, demographics, what were the underlying things. And in many ways, advertising is an honest conversation about where people are at in the world and how to communicate to them. I had actually done a sort of mission trip working in some sort of areas in the US, which is sort of, I guess, quite economically struggling. And so at the same time, God was like putting a heart for ministry in me. And so I ended up leaving my studies and did ministry. But that interest of like what's happening in the culture, you know, how do you communicate to people? And I think also Melbourne, the city I'm in, it's a city of around 5 million people. It's very multicultural, very secular, and sort of a, you know, progressive environment. You always have to be doing sort of missions, really. And so I think it was all those components came together, I guess, for, God put me in the right place at the right time.
Well, Melbourne is fascinating. Love that city. I remember I've been there a couple of times. I think I saw an Australian rules football game there.
Oh, yeah. And, wow.
The people, I mean, you would have thought it was the Super Bowl. I think it was just like a random Tuesday night game. But I heard a guy's leg break as he went up to kick. And someone tried to block it, and the crowd cheered. And I was like, okay, these Australians take their sport seriously. But let's talk about ministry in Australia, very much a post-Christian society. For those who don't know, Australia began as a penal colony from Great Britain. But I would love for you to describe what ministry is like. I know you have enough interactions with pastors in America and the UK. You probably noticed some of the differences. Share about how hard and maybe some of the gifts of being in such a post-Christian environment have been.
Well, I think one of the unique challenges about Australia is it's a very successful post-Christian culture. And because Australia is, you know, blessed with incredible natural resources and, you know, aluminium or aluminium, as you'd say, you know, uranium. You know, there's just so much stuff that's in the ground in Australia. So that means we sell that on to places like China. So there's a very high standard of living. And also we inherited a lot of the British social institutions. We learned from some of the American social institutions, but we adapted them. And I think Australia's been very successful at that. So Australia's a very egalitarian society. The traditionally hasn't been a huge gap between the rich and poor. There's actually been quite a middle class society. So that's wonderful to live in. There's universal healthcare and incredible infrastructure and growing cities. But what that means is that you are constantly distracted and you're constantly, I think, almost feels like it's competing against events. You mentioned sports there. Like at any time in Melbourne on the weekend, there's multiple huge sporting events. You know, we just had Taylor Swift here who did 300,000 people shows. You know, there's a real restaurant culture. So at any time on Sunday, people come into my church are making a decision not to be at the beach, skiing in the mountains, at great restaurants, at a music festival, at a sports game. So I feel like until probably recently, we've really sort of had this sense, and Australia, New Zealand as well, is a bit like we're far away from everything, so we're safe. So that's bad when you've got to fly somewhere because it takes ages. But I think what that does is it creates a society where it feels like you don't need God. But interestingly, I think post-COVID, that's beginning to change. I mean, we're seeing some, you know, inflation and cost of living crisis. I think also a geopolitical position in the Pacific and some of the tensions in the Pacific. I don't think it's as intense as other countries, but I think for the first time, you're starting to hear people starting to question everything, particularly around housing affordability. So the Australian dream of, I'll be able to have a great life, better than my parents, that's up in the air as it is in lots of places. So I'm seeing some openings in Australia. And also, again, because Australia is so multicultural, you know, like 87% of Australians are very pro-migration because I think it's been so successful here. But what that means is it creates an opportunity where there's post-Christianity, but then there's pre-Christianity. You know, so last week, you know, there's Hindu people who come into my services, Buddhist people, you know, Muslim people from other parts of the world who are seeking as well. So, yeah, it's a really interesting environment.
Well, thank you for sharing it that way. I do think there's always opportunities, even in the midst of the challenges. Talk about what are some things you're seeing in what some of us might see on the news, but that you're seeing God doing. Like there's geopolitical things. I mean, you mentioned some of those, but what are most pastors missing when it comes to what's happening in our world?
Well, I think I feel... for a long time, I'm almost the opposite of what a lot of other people are feeling. For a while there, you know, in the sort of 2010s, you know, first half of the 2010s and in the 2000s, I felt, you know, quite discouraged. You know, I think we were going through an economic boom, particularly up to, you know, the global financial crisis. But even after that, I sort of felt like this thing of, you know, a bit hopeless about the future of the church. A lot of other people felt comfortable at that time. Right. And I've flipped. Where I feel quite optimistic about the future of the church. And the reason is because I think that the idols of our culture are falling. And, you know, across the Western world, different countries has different expressions. And actually, I'd say the entire developed world, it's happening beyond just the Western world. There is disillusionment in politics, in entertainment, in sports. Just here, our biggest supermarket chain, which Australians have always sort of gone to and loved, has been exposed in the last week in a big price gouging. CEO had to step down. And, you know, Australia, the brand Qantas was our national carrier. We loved it. You'd fly to somewhere in the world, you get a Qantas plane, come back, highest brand sort of, you know, appreciation in the nation. Their brand is plummeting. You know, they're just local Australian expressions, but, you know, US in politics, in big business, in real estate, it's just phenomenal. I can't think of a time where globally, maybe the 1600s, but globally there's been such a tumult in distrust in the things that we formerly look to. Now, that has negative effects. I'm not going to gloss over that. That can create more fractious and polarized societies. But there's a huge question that's happening underneath the surface, and we can miss it because it's not communicated on TV or on social media. But people are saying, if I can't believe in that, maybe I need to find something else to believe in. And I think that is happening everywhere, and we need to be attuned to that conversation.
I think that's such a important thing, and I highly again recommend Rebuilders. You do talk about some of these cultural changes that we should be aware of and looking to. And many of your books deal with that. And I think one of my favorite aspects of your ministry is your call for renewal. And really, the reappearing church, the subtitle is The Hope for Renewal in the Rise of Our Post-Christian Culture. Strange Days was about following the Spirit in the time of upheaval. And then, and I want to spend a little bit of time too on my favorite book of late is Non-Anxious Presence. You know, how a changing and complex world will create a remnant of renewed Christian leaders. Maybe talk about how renewal has moved to the forefront of your ministry and how that plays itself out at Red Church.
Well, I got to a stage in, it was during a sermon in 2017, and we had, it was actually at our evening service, and, you know, the room was filled with millennials, and I was preaching, and on the surface, it would look like we're doing lots of things right. You know, a lot of the churches have got older people, we're attracting younger people. But I just had this sense as I was speaking that no matter what programmatic tweaks we do, that a breakthrough needed to happen. And, you know, sort of getting to an end of oneself, really. And I remember at that point, it was one of those dangerous moments where you're preaching and God's speaking to you and there's two trains of thought going on. You know, I just really felt this call towards, you know, renewal. And interestingly, God was seeding that in different people around the place. And so we started pushing into that. We had an initial sort of, I think, move of God, like really small, just after the service. We started like calling people for prayer and people would stay around and keep praying for several hours after the service. But it sort of died off and it sort of would come back in different waves, and we kept pushing towards it. And almost it was more the promise. And as I studied church history, I saw that so often the great moves and awakenings, outpourings, revivals, whatever language you want to use, came after tremendous cultural tumult and at very low points of the church. And I felt like, well, this is us, like we're in a tumult, you know, but more was to come, you know, and I wrote, you know, this reappearing church. And there's a famous line that people, I forgot about, people sent it to me where I, you know, talked about if a global Spanish flu type virus took over the world, things would change, you know, and there'd be openings. And then sure enough, you know, we had COVID and so many different things post then, political, geopolitical wars, you name it. And, you know, what I've seen is, and it's interesting, going back to the first 7 weeks of COVID, in the first, we look at COVID as an entire thing now, and we look at the whole arcs of it. But the first 7 weeks when the entire world shut down and every global capital was on TV, on CNN, empty, like a apocalypse, when we thought that medical solutions, antivirals, vaccines were 10 years away, when we thought that the death toll could be up to, you know, 1 in 10 or something, there was around the world, like I was talking to friends like in Denmark, super secular, where they were like, there's just this upsurge in people wanting to pray. And, you know, church online services went huge. So what that said to me was, you know, if a lot of these conditions around us, like post-Christianity works or secularism works, when you've got structures in place that enable you to think you can live a life without God, when they start to fall, this spiritual openness happens. And, you know, it doesn't happen in a moment, but what you're seeing is, you know, and I think it's interesting, like you look at something like the Asbury revival, a lot of the people who shepherd that talk about the fact that you've got Gen Z or Gen Z that have come to the end of themselves, see no hope, like they have no hope. I had this moment, my daughter is 16, I was talking to her about this, and I said to her, what's the difference between you and millennials? Like you're a Gen Z, what's the difference between you and millennials? And she said, millennials wanted to have an awesome life. My generation wants to survive and the world to be around when we're 30. And I was like, wow. And wow. So, you know, there is an openness, I think. And again, too, the mistake we can make is the entire generation is going to turn to God. It rarely happens like that. But there's always a growing remnant. The Great Awakenings wasn't the whole of society, but there was a growing remnant which did change large parts of society in different countries. So, you know, for us at Red, that meant we pushed into a renewal primarily paradigm versus a programmatic paradigm. Do we still do programs? Yes. Are there meetings where we're talking about our integration? Yes. Do we sit down every week and work out who's, you know, those people putting into the system, who's on the front door welcoming? All that stuff needs to happen. But I think what we came to was that a programmatic thing is not going to save us. Doing church just more efficiently or more better is not going to bring about the change that we need. Only the Spirit of God and His presence amongst us can do that. So we just constantly try and keep that at the forefront. And that's been hard. You know, we went through, Melbourne had, 2 years really of lockdown. It went for a very long time. A lot of churches got hit really hard by that. We had to completely rebuild. A lot of people we loved and loved our church left the city. A lot of people had to go back home overseas, and we had to rebuild. So we've kept that going in the midst of that. And so I think that's a key part of who we are.
Well, and what advice do you give to the pastor who's hearing this, the church leader who's hearing this and says, yes, that's what we need. We need renewal. Renewal in the midst of this languishing, pruned church. What advice would you give to those of us that are longing for that? How do we bring that sort of new mindset to our church?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is speak out the hungry. So in churches, we have an org chart and we have a hierarchy of positional, leadership. We also have a social hierarchy. So someone might have a position in the church, and then other people are just, knows everyone. They're the big personality. They're perhaps connected to lots of families in the church. And so often our ministry can focus on those people, and you need to. That's part of running an institution in human life. But then there's a hierarchy of the hungry. And what I realized was that often when we try and start something, we go and talk to the shakers and movers in the church, the people with influence. Where I sit now in the renewals that God has done amongst us, the people who I think are at the center of that are the people who are the most hungry. They're the most, some of them are the most unlikely people I thought would be at the forefront of things. If you'd said to me, some of our key spiritual, warriors and pillars of our church, people, if you'd said to me in 2016, oh, they're going to be that person, I'd be like, you're kidding me. But some had profound encounters with God, which has changed them. These are the people. We have a prayer room that's a big part of us, like a space where we come and pray. Not that that's any special place, but it's just something when you go. So in the center of our office building, we meet in two separate facilities from here. But in the center of our office, we built a prayer room. And you hear the door. We've got a code on the door. People can come in at different times. And so often we'll be in a meeting. You just hear the door open and close. And the people who go into that and are contending every day for God to move in our church are not the people often who I thought that would be. Mm-hmm. So who are the hungry? And then secondly, create secondary spaces where they can gather. So you've got the stuff that's always going in your church, services, et cetera, but for you need to create a space where, like, you don't cajole people to go. You just create a space where the hungry for God's presence and for transformation and renewal will come, and you just nurture that. So we last year just did this thing, the renewal sessions. We saw online after talking about the potential of this stuff for a long time, what was happening at Asbury. And as it was about a week or so in, I got a text from a friend, my wife and I, Trudy, was like, come over. It was horrendous flights at that time because they were sort of coming out of COVID. But I was like, God, I'm willing. If you want me to go there, I'll take the 27 flights to get there or whatever it was. And I just felt God say, no, create something here. So we simply said to our church, if you are hungry, we're going to gather at this time on this night, and we have no agenda but to seek God. About four times we did that, and I think it was the third or fourth one, like God just moved in this very powerful way, and a similar thing to what we'd read about Asbury. And that has been life transformative for people. That wouldn't have happened if we hadn't gathered the hungry and created a second space. That's now flowing into the service. Wow. That's flowing into the rest of the church, because those people were sort of like forerunners of embodying something, new creation. So that may be my initial advice to create it. And it's not who you can expect it to be. It's going to be, heavenly surprises will happen.
I love it. Thank you for that. I want to spend a little bit of time on non-anxious presence. It was one of my favorite reads for my sabbatical last year. It was taking a book that I loved, Failure of Nerve by Edward Friedman, that sadly he died while writing. And they cobbled together kind of the ending, but there were some nuggets in that book. But what you did is you took, some of your understanding of renewal and the Spirit of God and ministry, but you pulled those nuggets out and gave us a way to handle what he's teaching. Maybe just summarize some of your the insights you hope people get from that book. And that's the book we're going to be giving away to folks who sign up for my email newsletter at ericbryant.org. But tell us a little bit about your goal of non-anxious presence.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Like Friedman's book is, almost notes more than a book. And I think a lot of people might start it and finish it. And I think his daughters, I think maybe put together his notes as sort of a legacy, but there's gold in there. And the gold nugget really is he got us to think about leadership differently. Often we think about leaders who's the most charismatic, who's got the most degrees, who went to the best schools, who can speak the best, tallest person, you know, all these things. But he said, actually, the leader is the person who is the person who shows the most non-anxious presence. Hmm. And what he means by that is humans in human systems, we like bad news travels fast, nervousness travels fast. There's a sense where we think of ourselves as rational beings, and there's an element that that's true. But then if there's panic, you know, and if you've ever been in a stampede or a riot or, you know, one of those Boxing Day sales or whatever that, you know, they have, like, you know that humans can go from rational to irrational very quickly in a big group. And he says that's happening all the time. You know, if there's a decision made in a workplace that people are worried about, people will gather by the water cooler and like, oh, are you sensing this? And it's like we get into a negative cycle of, you know, spurring on and fanning into flames each other's anxiety. So he says that a lead is actually someone who can push back and create distance between themselves and the anxiety. And therefore, by doing that, in a sense, embody something that leads to a new future and a new possibility. And so, you know, I'd heard about his theory a few years earlier and it just kept sticking in my mind. And I think some of the things that he predicted in that book, I think, you know, have come to fruition. We as a society, he was writing before social media. Social media has only just intensified that. It's like throwing, you know, kerosene on a fire. It's just like unbelievable. And there's a reactivity now. Like in the past, if there was a social issue or a crisis in a church, you had time to get with the people you needed to speak to, formulate a paper, respond in a particular way. Now there's almost instantaneous reaction to things from the local to the global.
Yeah.
And so I think there's something in this as leaders. I saw leaders burning out, overwhelmed with fear. And I could identify at times when I felt that myself of like, oh, it cannot be that leadership is this just constant reactive thing to this. Almost like, I almost see it's like the world's become this gigantic stressed nervous system. Mm. And, you know, he says that it basically leaders who are non-anxious act like white blood cells bringing health to a system because they refuse to play in that anxiety and then they can point us towards where we need to go. I guess some of the things that I wanted to differentiate between me and himself was, you know, he was coming not from a Christian view of, we can't do that in our own strength. You know, his answer is the non-anxious presence leader has to be almost this person with incredible determination. And that's true. But I looked at myself going, I don't have that. I'm not that good. I've tried this. You know, who in a members meeting or a confrontation in a pastoral office where someone's attacking you personally and your emotions are raw? Yeah, we can do that in our own strength for a while, but eventually I think it's too much today. So I wanted to bring in the renewal piece because I thought there's truth here, but it can't be done in human strength. It's got to be, you know, the power of God in us and his spirit empowering us. Yeah, so there's an appreciation and there's a loving critique in that of his theory. You know, and I think that part of renewal, it's interesting, Chesterton, in his biography of Thomas Aquinas, talks about that often God brings a prophet who's the antidote to the illness of the age. And I feel if the illness of our age is anxiety, reactivity, polarization, anger, the antidote that will be people and a people of God who are filled with peace and non-reactivity, who take their task of being God's people in the world very seriously. I'm not talking about retreating to a mountaintop to not engage with the world. But, you know, so I feel there's something in this that's sort of prophetic to the spirit of our age.
Well, I cannot recommend more a non-anxious presence. MarkSayers.co. If you don't mind, for the last question, you predicted the pandemic. What do you see as maybe something you would forecast? I mean, again, you guys are a day ahead. Maybe it's just something in the very short term. But what should church leaders be on the lookout for and prepare for even?
Yeah, I think we you know, and one thing I talk about in the book is we'd be in between ages, if you like. Yeah. A lot of the chaos in the world is because the old era is passing and a new era is coming, but we don't fully see it straight. I think that's happening at such a profound level. And it's sometimes that'll happen in the international sphere, but not the local institutional sphere. It's happening everywhere at once. So, you know, I hate to say it. I think that there is, you know, a lot of the chaos and crisis that we've seen in politics, culture is going to continue for some time. I think it's going to happen more geopolitically. You know, we now have, you know, sort of wars that could spiral in certain areas. And I don't say that to make us afraid, but I do sense something that I think we need to be aware of. There is a growing tiredness and frustration with this all. And, you know, I think that you're seeing people going, this is too much. There is, I think, out there in many countries, a large majority of people who are like, okay, I'm done. At first, we thought a lot of this stuff was a blip and normal. We just had to hold on and normal order would be resumed. I don't think it is. I think it's a change in the global order. But I sense that there is a growing sense of people who, as the pain continues, will become more open to the opportunities. So I'd love to say that, you know, the political chaos and polarization, all this stuff, but I do think there's a sense where you're going to start to see leaders emerge, institutions emerge, who are actually not reacting and pointing away to the future, but it's going to take a little time. So as the church, I think it's really important for us to get about that task. The whole world mode is tearing things down at the moment. And sometimes there's things of injustice that need to be torn down. I don't argue with that. But I think actually the radical ones, this is why our podcast is called Rebuilders, is the most radical thing to do at the moment is to rebuild. Mm. And the quiet work of rebuilding is revolutionary. We live in the age of image where we can create tons of images. But I just think even if you're listeners, if you're out there and you're working hard, building something very quietly, dealing with human beings, you know, contributing to the kingdom of God, one conversation at a time, getting up, doing your day, you know, doing the ordinary things of life, that is more radical than you realize. And that's also where renewal happens. We love the stories of God outpouring in a place like, you know, the Asbury Chapel. And I want more of that. But also that flows into getting up, getting your kids to school, loving God, loving your neighborhood. That's also part of the renewal that God wants to bring.
That's right. Well, Mark, thank you for your prophetic voice. We're very grateful. And yeah, keep up the amazing work.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on the Post-Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.